One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If you're one of them, it's time to finally make it happen with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by more than 200 language experts. I'm using Babbel to work on my German skills. I love that its courses are based on realistic conversations, so they teach me the vocab I actually need to know. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special, limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/weirdest. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/weirdest. Spelled BABBEL.com/weirdest. Rules and restrictions may apply. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the right amount of socializing for you? Maybe you thrive around groups of people, but maybe you're a person who needs more alone time. Therapy has helped me better understand how my brain works and what kind of socializing is actually good for me. If you're thinking of starting therapy, but you just aren't sure how to make it happen, you might consider giving BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to any schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/weirdest today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/weirdest. Hey, weirdos, before we get into the episode, the weirdest thing I learned this week needs your help. For the first time ever, The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week has been nominated for a Webby Award. This is a huge deal and it's really exciting. And the best news is that you don't just have to sit there with your fingers crossed hoping we win. You can help us take home the Webby People's Voice Award. All you have to do is go vote for our show sometime before April 18th, 2024. You can find the link in the show notes of this episode or on my Patreon, or you can go to vote.webbyawards.com to show your support. You will find The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week in the Science and Education podcast category. Voting is only open until April 18th, so please go cast your ballot right now and tell all your friends. Jess and I are so excited about this nomination, and winning would mean the world to us. So we're so grateful for your support. Okay, now it's time for the show. Thanks for voting, weirdos. At Popular Science, we report and write dozens of science and tech stories every week. And while most of the stuff we stumble across makes it into our articles, we also find plenty of weird facts that we just keep around the office. So we figured, why not share those with you? Welcome to The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week from the editors of Popular Science. I'm Rachel Feltman.
I'm Jess Bodie.
And I'm Nimbly.
Nimbly, welcome to the show. It's
Yay!
So nice to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Jess, why don't you take the lead on talking about this awesome guest and who they are and what they do?
Yeah. This is Nimbly, my Twitch creator streamer friend. She is so lovely and wonderful. Does a lot of really calming content. Nim, do you want to like explain kind of the stuff you make?
Yes. First of all, thank you for having me here.
Yeah.
I adore you, Jess.
We're so happy. We're so happy to have you here.
Yeah. I mostly play high-end dark fantasy games, and I read the item descriptions and encyclopedias a lot.
Yeah.
Quietly. To an unhinged degree at some times.
Yeah.
Bursting through doors and talking about information a lot. Yeah, that's what I do on the internet.
Yeah. I love your content. I love what you make.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really shy too, so I apologize if there are pauses, but I'm happy to be here. This is me going to be challenging myself. It's like a boss fight, but a loving one. So thank you for challenging me on this lovely gloomy Wednesday. It's Wednesday.
Yes.
Is it?
Wednesday.
Which it is Wednesday.
Yes. Ideal because the episodes air on Wednesday and we're
true.
We are in fact recording on one. Who knows what the weather will be like when this airs, but
indeed.
You know, I feel like 50-50 chance it'll be gloomy because that's springtime. Well, we're so psyched to have you on and let's get right into the show. So on The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week, we start by each offering up a little tease about some kind of fact or story we found in the course of reading, writing, reporting, boss fights, etc., and decide which one we just absolutely have to hear more about first. Then once we've all had time to spin our little science yarns, we reconvene and decide what the weirdest thing we learned this week actually was in a non-competitive, chill, friendly way. Because the world is competitive enough without it also being on the show. Jess, why don't we start with your tease, which I'm sure actually has nothing to do with video games at all.
I, you know, every time I'm like, actually, this time it doesn't. And this time, off the cuff, I don't think it does. But you know, no promises. I might take it there eventually. My tease this week is that I want to talk about the lotion that attracts spiders.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I need to know that so I can never buy it.
Yes. I will explain.
My fact today is that ADHD may have evolved to make us better at foraging berries, which,
whoa,
you know, rude that that can't be my job today. But
right.
I forage facts instead. That's my
wow. Yeah. What a connection. I love that.
Nimbly, what's your tease?
I am a fellow fact forager, and my weird thing that I learned this week is that Venus, which is seen as a goddess of love and a planet of beauty, is actually evil and
oh my god,
horrible and toxic and
oh my god,
and abominable.
She's toxic. I love it. Jess, why don't you get started with lotion spiders? Because
I would love to.
I'd love to not end on that haunting note.
Yes, definitely more haunting.
Maybe this won't be haunting at all, but I'm I'm nervous.
No promises. Okay, cool. So, yeah, basically lotion spiders. So this was a big story around the internet, like at the end of last year, like in December of 2023. And you know, we've also been hearing a lot about like the children, like running through Sephora.
I was like, what about the children? But yes,
the children,
they are elephant. Running through Sephora,
the drunk yeah. elephant children. Yes.
This is very random, but I was in Aspen for work and there were so many children who were not just wearing luxury skincare, but like made up like adults in a way that reminded me of like, so I'm 32 and you know, in my youth, we all wore business casual. We like dressed like little adults.
Yeah.
In a way that's, it's like, it's not even like, it's not even like creepy skeezy. It's just like odd. And that was what their
makeup
was like.
Like the gaucho pant?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. The gaucho pant, the sensible blazer in middle school. And yeah, that was what their makeup reminded me of. I wasn't like, oh,
that's
this
so
is
weird.
Like hypersexualized and creeps me out. I was just like, why do you have contouring like you're 40?
That's a good point. That's so weird.
I was imagining like same kid yeah. eyeliner yeah. when I was in high yeah. school. Just like, oh, you know, just walking
that
around.
That was me.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. So yeah, you know, the kids in Sephora, you know, transition phrase, spiders in Sephora makes you think. So basically, yeah, at the end of last year, someone left a review on Sephora's website. It was about a specific kind of lotion from Sol de Janeiro, which is one of the brands those kids are going after, like Drunk
Absolutely.
Elephant. But it was the Delicia Drench Body Butter. And yeah, that company also makes like that Brazilian bum bum cream that goes on your butt cheeks, which I think is just awesome. But anyway, so I'll read you the review of this Delicia Drench Body Butter. Okay, this is on Sephora's website. 1 star, scent attracts wolf spiders.
Oh no.
If you're scared of wolf spiders, watch out for these lotions, LOL. I wanted to love them so bad, but one of the ingredients is like kryptonite to wolf spiders. And I just want to note, this is just speaking, not the review.
Yeah.
Kryptonite is not used correctly.
Right.
Kryptonite would probably mean it would scare them away. This person
that
means that it is attracting them.
Right.
Anyway, okay, so she continues, or they continue. I guess I don't know this person's pronouns. When I put it on, instantly one will come out. Normally I'll see one every like 3 years. Used this and it was every day. I stopped using it and I haven't seen one since. Oh, and one time the spider wanted to eat whatever ingredient it is so bad that it chased me. I swear, on everything, I'd run left, it ran left. I ran right, it ran right.
Oh my gosh.
Like it was...
It's like Scooby-Doo.
Like it was legit following the scent, and no, the scent isn't that good. Nothing a $5 vanilla cream can't match. Wow. So yeah, do be careful if you're frightened of spiders, especially the big wolf ones. Also, please don't hurt them if you do wear this and appear. Oh. Use a cup to put them outside. Sorry for a disappointing review. And that's the end. 22 wow. people marked it as helpful. I will add. So that appeared. And then after this review appeared, a couple others did, saying kind of a similar thing. And not as entertaining of a message, but, you know, people are saying, I saw wolf spiders when I wore this. So, for those who don't know, wolf spiders, you know, they're these dark colored arachnids that have these long, skinny legs. They live in North America. They can get up to like an inch and a half, 2 inches in diameter. Like, they're not little guys. They can get pretty large. And their bites are not a big danger to humans. Like, it's like any bug bite. Some people are allergic to their venom, but it's pretty rare. So not hugely troublesome spiders, but they obviously can give you a fright, especially if you do not like bugs, especially spiders. So, handful of lotion spider reviews pop up on Sephora, but then someone posted it to Reddit and everybody was like, wait, I too have experienced this.
Reddit is the go-to spiders. Place for I too have experienced this, I would say.
Yes.
You can post anything and someone will be like, oh, me too.
Exactly.
That's how I verify information, actually, is I put my query and then Reddit.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Exactly. Lotion attracting spider Reddit is what I'm sure many of people typed in. So here's a Reddit post from SageGray3. This explains the spiders, ... Though this review made me laugh so much, I stopped in my tracks and realized that, strangely enough, I've seen a couple while wearing it. The last time I wore it, one crawled right in front of me. I took a photo and asked Google what kind of spider, and sure enough, wolf spider, ... Very strange, ... I sure didn't correlate it with the lotion, ... And then...
this narration is exquisite.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah. I'm having fun if you can't tell. Yes. And then, so this other person's named, hey, it's just Choco, is their Reddit username. They did an experiment, you know, armchair scientist, many of those in this tale, saying that they wanted to do an experiment. So this is their post. I will experiment today and keep you updated. Update 4 hours. I've seen two spiders at work. One came at me and one didn't. I put some cream on a tissue to see if it would interest a spider. We'll update soon. Update at 10 hours. Spiders went to the tissue paper. I think they're attracted to the pheromones of the cream. So,
the pheromones of the cream.
The pheromones, which that'll actually come back.
Oh.
Okay, this is also an aside. But in this thread, a lot of people were kind of talking about like lotions or perfumes that attract other bugs or animals in their experience. And someone was saying that they were wearing Victoria's Secret Pure Seduction body spray. And they went swimming in a river and they got swarmed by fish. Like, they kept kind of like getting nibbled. Then this person kind of felt like a bigger bite. And then they were like, oh my God, I'm bleeding. And then they looked and there was a huge alligator gar that was like chasing them.
And like, gars don't like go after people. That's wild. I know.
I need to see what this looks like.
Yeah.
They're freaky looking, but they're like, you don't normally have to worry that one of them is gonna snack on you.
Yeah. And again, this is anecdotal. Who's to say if this is true or like if it was the Victoria's Secret Pure Seduction? Sorry, Rachel, go ahead.
Oh, no. Just it's funny, though, because I would have to look up which one it is, but there's a Victoria's Secret perfume, or maybe not Victoria's Secret, but there was a very like girly, sugary perfume involved in that because it had, it turned out to have pheromones that attracted lions. So.
Yeah. Like, it's not an uncommon thing.
Right.
Like, I think a lot of entomologists like scoffed at this whole thing, which I'll talk more about too. But like, when people say like, oh, it's the pheromones. But like, it's not totally unfounded.
Right, yeah.
You know? So, of course, as you might guess, Reddit discourse blew up about lotion spider saga. And this is armchair scientist number two. This person thought they had it all figured out. Speaking of pheromones, this is from Marching Koala. This is what they said. Hello, I just did a little dive into chemicals that attract spiders because I really don't like bugs. According to studies, there's a two-component female-produced pheromone of the spider. It basically signals for sexual communication. The chemical analysis reveals that farnesyl acetate, diisobutyl phthalate, and hexadecyl acetate of the spider webs exhibited higher relative abundance in sexually receptive females. This person is just reading from like a scientific study, and I don't think fully grasping exactly the particular this what they're saying could be true, but I think they're taking it out of context, basically. Sure. And basically they're saying that those two chemicals, the farnesyl acetate and hexadecyl acetate, attract male spiders. They did not specify what spider this study looked at. And at the end they say summary, but spelled with two U's instead of A-R-Y, it's U-R-Y. Combine farnesyl acetate with hexadecyl acetate in the right dosage, and it might bring all the thirsty boy spiders to your yard, because you may also smell like a thirsty girl spider. Basically, they're saying that those two chemicals... Oh, I skipped this part. Basically, those two chemicals are what are commonly used in many body creams and lotions. And those are two chemicals that are also in this scientific study about spider pheromones. So they're making this connection that if this lotion that people are saying attracts wolf spiders has these chemicals, and that wolf spiders use those chemicals as pheromones, you know, it's only natural to think that that is what's going on. And then somebody saw this message and tweeted, it's literally made out of spider pheromones. You can't make this up. Y'all are wearing spider pheromones and attracting all the male spiders. Oh my God. That's what somebody tweeted. So
incredible. What a microcosm of internet
yes.
lore creation and discourse.
Truly, it really got out of hand very quickly. So much so that the lotion brand chimed in.
Oh my God.
They said, quote, all of our products, including our new Delicia Drench Body Butter and upcoming Cheriosa 59 Perfume Mist, are free from farnesyl acetate, diisobutyl phthalate, and hexadecyl acetate. So they said, we don't have any of those things you guys are talking about. None of the quote-unquote spider pheromones are in these products.
They didn't say it didn't have other spider pheromones.
It sounds like it was would have been
easy
spider.
To just say, we don't have any spider pheromones. I guess they were like, we can neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah, pretty much. And they ended their statement by saying, quote, so while they may attract a lot of attention from people, they won't from arachnids, even though we love all creatures at Sol de Janeiro, which I think is laying out a little thick, but also kind of nice.
Yeah, I was about to say I feel bad for laughing because actually someone clearly painstakingly crafted that statement and it's sweet.
yeah, I think it's nice. So basically, this idea kept proliferating online, even though Sol de Janeiro was like, we don't have these chemicals, we don't use these compounds that could be likened to a spider pheromone. So, you know, at the end of the day, what do the entomologists say? What do the scientists say about all this? Like, could this lotion really be attracting wolf spiders? You're probably asking this.
That's yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Big surprise. Scientists say nope.
Dang it.
So I know. Well, it's good if you don't like spiders,
it's
I guess.
Good. It's good.
But I too was hoping for a little bit of a mechanism at play.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. Floyd W. Shockley, which is the name of an entomologist if I've ever heard one. This guy is the chair of Entomology Collections Committee at the Smithsonian, and he told the New York Times that the memes showed a, quote, glaring lack of understanding about the diversity of wolf spiders. This guy also sent, this is in an email, so he's, you know, he's at his desk furiously typing this.
Absolutely.
It is highly unlikely that the skin cream company, through random chance, combined enough things in just the right proportion to mimic a spider compound. So he did say highly unlikely and not impossible. I would like to clarify there. So you never know. At the end of the day, though, this probably was a case of confirmation bias.
Right.
So this was this all kind of went down, as I said, at the end of last year, which is during the winter months, which it's getting colder. Bugs come inside to shelter from the cold. People probably were wearing this new lotion that just released. They saw the spiders coming inside. They were like, oh, these two things are connected. And I'm noticing the spiders more because I'm reading about the reviews online.
Right.
So it could be confirmation bias. And then another scientist debunked this, or tried to debunk it, I guess, by explaining that the sex pheromones that these armchair scientists claim could be in the lotion are actually super mega specific to each individual species of spider. There are like thousands of different kind of wolf spider species. Right. So the chance that this weird chemical reaction would happen precisely correctly to attract the all the same wolf spider across all these reviews is like very unlikely. And yeah, just, you know, at the end of the day, I'm wrapping up, but you know, in general, the entomology community was kind of persnickety about the whole thing. There was a press release that called it a brouhaha,
which is a
word I would like to bring back into my vocabulary, yeah. I think. And like there was this one University of Cincinnati professor, George Utz, I think is how you say it. He studies wolf spiders in the lab. And he said, quote, "The internet is a great source of information, but it's not always accurate. And someone putting a dab of body butter on a tissue and reporting it on Reddit that it attracts spiders doesn't count as research." So they were up in arms.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong. Let me be clear.
I'm imagining like a Powerpuff Girls Professor Utonian scenario where the scientists were in the lab and accidentally meet.
That's exactly
spider
it.
Bomb.
Yeah. Wait, that's so cute. So yeah, that's basically, you know, that's my story. And I also want to say, like, at least here in America, Australia, their spiders are so scary. Right. But at least here in America, you know, don't fear the spider unless it's like a black widow. You know, there's things you should fear. But generally, if you see a spider in your house, like, it's probably doing a lot of good for you. It's probably that's eating true. Other annoying bugs. I like the original person who kicked all of this off, what they said in their review. If you see a spider in your house, don't kill it. Yeah. Put it in a cup and take it outside. Like, spiders are people too. Not really, but they're good. They're good things.
They're good. They eat mosquitoes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to, like, hang out with a bunch of spiders, but, like, I do respect their... I respect the person, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. What a great story. It had so much.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I feel like I went on an entire journey with that thing.
Yeah. Me too. That's why I was like, I gotta talk about this.
Of spider avoiding lotions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, it truly was a plot twist for me that there were no video games involved, because honestly, when you said spider lotion, I was like, something from a video game. Where it's lotion made of spiders.
It sounds like it should be. I will say,
yeah. To The Last of Us 2.
I haven't played Last of Us 2. I've only played the first one.
I don't know about Last of Us.
But okay. It feels like there could be spider lotion.
That's true.
Lotion, spider.
It sounds kind of Bloodborne-y, honestly. Like, yeah. there's a spider named Rom in that game, and she's wonderful. She used to be a scholar, and then she, you know, learned too much in a Lovecraftian way and then turned into a spider, so... She's great. Anyway, there's my video game connection.
Fear the old bomb.
Fear the old bomb.
Incredible. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with some more facts.
This episode is brought to you by Babbel. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If you're one of them, it's time to finally make it happen with Babbel. With Babbel, you don't have to pay hundreds of dollars for a private tutor or waste hours on apps that are actually just games. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by more than 200 language experts. They can help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I'm using Babbel to work on my German skills. I love that its courses are based on realistic conversations, so they teach me the vocab I actually need to know. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology makes it easy for me to improve my pronunciation and accent even when I'm studying alone. If you want a live classroom experience from the comfort of your home, Babbel Live is for you. Babbel Live classes are available 7 days a week at any time of day and taught by more than 450 certified teachers, so you can learn on your schedule. If you're more of a solo learner, Babbel has more than 13,000 hours of learning content ready for you to access at any time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/weirdest. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/weirdest, spelled BABBEL.com/weirdest. Rules and restrictions may apply. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up now that it's spring. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around groups of people, but maybe you're a person who needs more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been working with therapists for more than a decade. Therapy has helped me better understand how my brain works and what kind of socializing is actually good for me. If you're thinking of starting therapy, but you just aren't sure how to make it happen, you might consider giving BetterHelp a try. BetterHelp is entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to any schedule. You just have to fill out a brief questionnaire and you get matched with a licensed therapist. If it's not a good fit, you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/weirdest today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/weirdest.
Okay, we're back. And I'm going to talk about my fact, which is about ADHD. A thing I have.
Yay!
And was diagnosed with as an adult. Which,
me too.
Like, yeah. a tale as old as time. And so, yeah, this is mostly about a new study, but I also want to explain some of the context of the research. But basically, researchers from the University of Pennsylvania recently released a study on the potential evolutionary benefits of ADHD. A lot of neurodiversity has historically been talked of in terms of negatives. And I think increasingly things like people are talking about things like ADHD and autism and being on the autism spectrum as being like more neutral and potentially having things about them that are really cool. And obviously that like really resonates with me as somebody who, does have like a funky brain. But I think, it's also really important from like a scientific perspective to sort of like break away from the idea of like what is sort of like normal and good and really increasingly getting away from the idea that there's any like right normal way for a human brain to work. Because come on, have you ever been in a brain? I'm absolutely unhinged.
All the time.
I have been in a cat brain, but that'll be for another conversation.
Oh my God.
So in this study, they analyzed data from 457 adults once they pulled out, the surveys they couldn't use, always part of a study, who played an online foraging game. And the objective of the game was to collect as many berries as possible within an 8-minute span, which honestly, I was reading the description of this game and I was like, this feels like really familiar. And I'm like, wasn't this literally a game in Neopets with berry collection? I'm going to keep describing the game and tell me if you agree. So players could either choose to keep collecting berries from the bushes in their original location or move to a new patch. And then moving would cause them like a brief timeout, which was not part of the Neopets game, but this was a timed study. And there was no guarantee when they moved that the new patch would have as many berries as their current location. So you were taking a risk, but the number of berries you could get from each bush would go down each time you foraged it again. So like, you could take the strategy of being like, I am making sure I've gotten every possible berry from these bushes where I know there are berries, or you can lose a little bit of time to go look for bushes that might be more plentiful. But there was definitely a berry picking thing in Neopets that was like, there was also sort of a search versus exploit tactic.
I do have a vague memory of that. I like can see the bushes,
right?
In my
yeah.
mind's eye. Yeah.
I was never very good at it. But apparently.
Oh, I think it was called Pick Your Own.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Wow. Well, I would simply love to know if researchers from this study were inspired by that game or just happened to create something very similar. If you are listening, please let me know. But yeah, they played this game, and then along with the game, the subjects took a survey that was designed to assess whether they had symptoms of ADHD. So it was self-reported. It didn't constitute like a full or formal diagnosis, but it screened for traits like having difficulty concentrating. And when the researchers compared the survey results with the gameplay stats, they found that people with ADHD symptoms played differently and actually more effectively than people who didn't have those symptoms or who had, you know, who ranked lower on that symptom score. Basically, they were more likely to move on to another bush more quickly, and they collected an average of 602 berries compared with 521. So, you know, a pretty big difference when you're talking about having enough berries to eat. Of course, that being said, I probably don't need to tell you that this isn't exactly a perfect model for like actual foraging. The researchers do hope to do a similar experiment in the future involving in-person foraging. And in that case, they would also actually use people with a formal ADHD diagnosis instead of relying on these self-reported surveys. That would obviously be a much more complicated experiment to run. And I absolutely volunteer. I want to go pick berries for science. So please call me. But, you know, while this study does have its shortcomings, this isn't the first research to suggest that ADHD traits and other types of neurodiversity might have evolved to actually help our ancestors survive in just very different conditions than most of us live in now. And that, you know, the quote unquote downsides of these conditions are often due to a mismatch between what the traits evolved to do and like what we're expected to do from day to day to day. We did not evolve to sit in chair and type. I personally love to sit in chair and type. I love that my job is not like chase mammoth. But apparently my brain might be designed more for chase mammoth than for to sit in chair and type. My body, absolutely not. But listen, we live in a society and we've had many years to become what we are. I wrote a post once for, I read it for my Substack, but I'm going to cross post it to my Patreon because I'm transitioning over to that platform. But it was called We're Not the Pinnacle of Anything. And it was about like, we tend to have this bias to believe that like humanity is evolving towards something and like becoming right. more perfect, which is really based on like, you know, the fact that eugenics was mainstream science for way more of modern history than people like to admit or reflect on. And actually, evolution is super random and is not, we're not getting better or worse. We're just getting different. And sometimes you spend like 90% of your species history foraging and hunting, and then you switch to being agrarian and then industrial, and that's a relatively short time for traits to catch up, so everything's just gets a little silly, and that's okay. We're all fine. But yeah, other studies have examined the differences in how people with ADHD search for information and objects and found that we spend more time in the explore phase of foraging versus the exploit phase. So that's literally, you know, searching for bushes with berries in them versus grabbing the berries from the bush. And of course, explore and exploit are both crucial to coming home with berries. But you can either... you can lean really hard into seeking out as many new bushes as possible. You can lean really hard into just making sure you get every single berry that you see in front of you at any given moment. And most people are going to do something in between those two tactics. And yeah, people with ADHD tend to be more into exploring. And the connection that researchers often make is that we have this, you know, hyper-focused tendency with ADHD where, yes, you have trouble paying attention often in certain circumstances, but there's also this tendency to get really focused on a thing, often not the thing that's like quote-unquote important or like good for you to focus on. And so like talking about hobbies and, you know, going on Wikipedia spirals. Literally, this show exists because of my hyperfixations. Like, truly, that is why we are here today. But yeah, the idea that what we're doing is like going into that explore phase and not caring so much about the exploit, not caring about finishing the task or starting another task, and really just playing around and exploring. There's actually some ongoing research I found that I'll link to on my Patreon and on popsci.com/weird that suggests that kids with ADHD are less susceptible to inattention bias, which is that thing that the study with the gorilla tests. So there's this very famous study, and you can like find the video online and test it for yourself, where it's like, okay, count how many times this ball gets passed and people are throwing the ball around. And then in the course of that video, spoiler alert, somebody in a gorilla suit walks across the screen.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
And inattention bias is the phenomenon where something really, really wild can happen, but if you are focused on collecting other information, you can just completely miss it, because our brains filter information for us. So even though it's right in front of your face that there is a gorilla walking across the screen, your brain might not really show you that gorilla in a meaningful way, because it's like we literally have to keep our eye on the ball. So anyway, there are some researchers working on the idea that kids with ADHD, because of this like sort of tendency for exploration and not like focusing on sort of arbitrary tasks, that they might actually be less susceptible to inattention bias. As far as I can tell, that study hasn't been published yet. It's maybe been presented at some conferences, but I do think it's a really intriguing idea. I certainly did not see the gorilla.
Yeah.
But listen, we're talking about on average. So there is also some evidence to support the idea that this is like an evolutionary benefit. So in 2008, researchers found that members of a nomadic group in Kenya who had gene mutations associated with ADHD were in better health than average in their group. And then those same mutations were associated with malnourishment in closely related people who lived as farmers. Basically, this group had people starting to farm while others were continuing to live nomadically as they had for generations. And you could see these ADHD-associated gene mutations having very different impacts on them. Of course, it looks like this study was looking at the gene mutations as opposed to really screening them for ADHD behaviors, but it is really intriguing. There's this broad idea known as the hunter versus farmer hypothesis, that the hyper-focus associated with ADHD was just really useful for that like 90% of human history that we were foraging, and then much less useful in agrarian and industrialized life. Yeah, one 1998 study, just to like tie a bow on how useful ADHD can be, but also painful. One 1998 study found that adults with self-reported ADHD were much better at being able to postpone eating, sleeping, and other personal needs to absorb themselves in an urgent task, like a last minute deadline. Which does track.
Sure. Fight in a game, you know, you
yeah. And
totally.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a mindset that would have come in handy for like unpredictable food acquisition, like this sudden appearance of a herd of animals or an unexpected bounty of berries. Less useful when you like farm, that has a pretty like set schedule and just a lot of not very exciting work you have to do every day. Yeah, some researchers, this is like, I only found like one paper on this, but it's just really interesting, so I'll mention it with that caveat. Some researchers have even suggested that sugar can sometimes trigger hyperactivity symptoms because the fructose makes our brain think we've come across like a foraging bounty, and they're like, time to look for more berries.
Right.
And yeah, I obviously we have a lot more studies to do to like say with any kind of certainty that, you know, this is why ADHD evolved and, you know, what it was useful for in the past. But I just think it's so important to really be willing to like reframe our perspective on, you know, how brains work and even on like, you know, what quote unquote disorders might mean for people. And like just for comparison, you know, ADHD was originally called hyperkinetic impulse disorder. And when a British pediatrician, Sir George Still, brought it, which is an ironic name, now I'm thinking
yeah.
about it. When he first brought it up in 1902, he called it an immoral defect of moral control in children.
What?
So it really boils down the fact that like the disorder in ADHD is about like kids not doing what you think they should be doing when you want them to do it. Not that it can't cause real problems. I don't mean to minimize genuine struggles that people can have, but it's like it's all very context dependent. And I think that's so important when we think about like how brains work and how people behave and like what is good and normal. And yeah, I'll just end by saying that the Association of Foragers actually has this lovely essay that I'll link to. That's just a couple of foragers with ADHD talking about how useful their ADHD is for their foraging, because
Wow. They
like, you know, look in more places and they spot more stuff and they're like exploring and they're like, we don't want to do the admin tasks for the Foraging Association and we'll admit that. But Boy, are we great at finding stuff on the ground. That's my fact today.
That's lovely. That's cool to see the other perspective on it.
Totally.
Hyperkinetic makes me feel like a superhero, though. I might have to rebrand.
Yeah, like honestly, I think hyperkinetic is so absurdly over the top that it kind of swings back around to being like cool.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take one more quick break and then we'll be back with one more fact.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. When the Pacific hagfish feels stressed, it can produce 24 liters of slime almost instantaneously. That's pretty much what my seasonal allergies feel like. And as a professional podcaster, having constant congestion and post-nasal drip isn't just annoying. It can literally derail my workday. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. I just switched to Claritin D for my allergies a few days ago, and I'm really loving it so far. Claritin D's decongestant packs a serious punch, which helps keep my sinuses free and clear no matter what allergens I have to face. I tend to get colds on top of my allergies, which then turn into sinus infections, so having a decongestant as powerful as the one in Claritin D makes a big difference. Claritin D's fast, non-drowsy symptom relief starts working on allergies with nasal congestion in as little as 30 minutes. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science, with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill discuss how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. The veteran biotech executive also shares his thoughts on how to keep things innovative at a company that's been around since the 1860s. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can find this episode and many more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. And Nimbly, tell me about Venus and everything that... I didn't know about her.
Okay, so Venus, also known as Aphrodite, if you're thinking of the mythological creature, character, whatever you like to call her, or Earth's evil twin, as she's been dubbed by NASA, has always kind of fascinated me, but especially since I've been doing some research for some Elden Ring
stuff,
some Elden Ring DLC drip that we've been getting over the last few weeks. I'm really excited about that.
Me too.
And people that are into the series are probably like, okay, what does this planet / goddess have to do with the game? I'm not going to talk about that too much, but how I got there, I was looking at toxic girl bosses within Elden Ring. If you know, you know.
There are many.
And specifically ones that are golden in hue. And then that got me on another little tangent spiral. And I was thinking about, okay, interplanetary, cosmic horror type beat. And then it got me thinking about Venus the planet, because I think of, you know, beauty and nature, and birth is a major theme around the goddess. But a lot of that scientific research began from astrological research. I know that seems like I'm all over the place, because I am, but I promise this is going to make even more sense when we look at first the myth of Venus. So in short, this is pulled from mythopedia.com. It's a little bit hard to source scientific facts with mythology because it's historical.
Sure.
And that gets tampered with a lot. But so Mythopedia gives this brief overview of Venus being the Roman goddess of love, maternal care, reproduction, and desire. She's seen as the loveliest of all deities by immortals and gods alike. But what we don't know about her was her... entomology of her name. So we know that it is likely derived from the classic Latin noun Venus, which means love, but there's another connection within the Latin language, which is venenum, which sounds like venom, which literally means poison, poisonous charm, or aphrodisiac, which is so funny that Jess mentioned the pheromones and attracting horrible, awful things, because that is one of her true origins.
It's all coming together.
That got me really curious about, like I mentioned, the planetary side of Venus, because it being Earth's evil twin, composition wise, Earth and Venus are very similar. When I went and did my initial digging on NASA, so science.nasa.gov, there was a really lovely interview covering why is Venus called Earth's evil twin? We ask a NASA scientist. So it follows. Venus and Earth are sometimes called twins because they're pretty much about the same size. Venus is almost as big as the Earth. They also formed in the same inner part of the solar system. It's our closest neighbor. So when they were formed, they were made out of the same materials. So you would think that they would have turned out to be very, very similar. But they went down two very, very different paths. So we live on Earth. We know what Earth is like. It's habitable for the most part. Our weather is kind of weird, you know, climate change. But Venus is covered with this horrible, 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 thick gloomy, golden, murky carbon dioxide atmosphere and has a supercharged greenhouse effect. And it's so hot that it can melt lead. The temperatures on the surface of Venus are 900 degrees Fahrenheit, which is a little bit too toasty for me.
Yeah, a little warm.
And the clouds are 15 miles thick. So it's essentially just this entire golden, murky hot pot. Why does that draw back to Venus, the goddess, and why does that draw back to Elden Ring? I won't go on that too much just for spoiler territory, but...
It is fascinating. Now that I am hearing your fact and thinking about Elden Ring, I'm like, this is fascinating. And I don't want to spoil too much for people who haven't played the game, because if you haven't played the game, you should.
You should.
But I love where you're going with this, and we can talk offline, because this is really cool.
Yes, it's so cool. Shout out to From Software for just blowing my mind. But it made me think about how I don't know. I think it shattered my mind in thinking, oh, I know that Venus is not habitable because I know that scientists have sent out different exploration probes throughout the years, but I wanted to do some more digging because I feel like we know a lot about Mars because we're trying to terraform it, hopefully, at some point. But I went back to NASA because where else would I go for, you know, American space exploration?
Totally.
And there were apparently 40 missions to Venus.
40?
40. Not Holy all cow. Done by NASA. I think there were several that were done in Japan. That was the most recent. That was in 2010. And when we see how that went. So the Akatsuki mission of Japan was Japan's first successful mission to explore another planet. Currently still in progress and seen as successful based on NASA's website. We're hoping to get more factoids back about Venus's atmosphere, because as it stands, we know that it is horribly toxic and inhabitable, but we want to understand how Venus came to be that way, because as we know currently, the Earth is experiencing its own greenhouse effect due to climate change, which is, you know, kind of frightening to think about. Someday the Earth may also be 900 degrees Fahrenheit. Luckily, that's not in the cards for us anytime soon. But with my doom scrolling, I was really curious, like, how soon could that be? Because, you know, that's where these go. I hope this isn't getting too scary for the podcast.
Okay. We scare people all the time.
That's what I was worried about as I was reading this. I'm like, this research hasn't been successful yet. You know, all these probes end up getting lost, and it's actually pretty fascinating. Going back to that point, when you look at the list of 40 missions to Venus, most of them up until this began in 1961 by the USSR. And the first successful mission was done by NASA in 1962. So what does successful mean? It just means that they got the craft to land and get a small bit of data back. But I think they figured out how to build their spacecrafts properly when it came around to 1975. And since then, we've been sending, we being Earthlings, have been sending crafts back to Venus pretty much every 3 years. And just gradually getting more and more data. It's very difficult to find science relating Venus's atmosphere back to the greenhouse effect on Earth, but fortunately, the University of Chicago, of all places, wrote a research paper on how Venus originally had water similar to Earth, but lost it. So this article is by the University of Chicago News and titled, "Was Venus Ever Habitable? New UChicago Study Casts Doubt." Research suggests the planet lost its water early on in its history. For centuries, humans have been wondering whether anyone lived on Venus. In the 60s, telescopes delivered bad news. Modern-day Venus is thoroughly hostile to life, shrouded in thick, acidic clouds and sweltering at 900 degrees Fahrenheit. However, the question remained whether Venus started its life as a more habitable planet before a runaway greenhouse gas effect baked it dry. But a new study from the University of Chicago argues there is little chance the planet was ever habitable. By examining the composition of Venus's atmosphere today and running simulations of its past to recreate those conditions, the researchers found very few scenarios in which the planet could have sustained liquid water and moderate temperatures for long. It continues here to say, our research suggests that Venus has been uninhabitable for at least 70% of its history, four times longer than some previous estimates. From a great distance, Earth and Venus could be cousins. They're both rocky and similar distances from the sun, but clearly they have had extremely different outcomes as far as habitability goes. And this part I thought was really funny because it just reminded me of Lord of the Rings for some reason. So the trouble is that even though Venus is close to us, the planet keeps its secrets. Venus's extremely hot surface means no landing crafts has lasted longer than a couple of hours, and volcanic eruptions have obliterated most evidence from ancient rocks. And they're hoping to learn much more. It's a really exciting time for planetary science. This is how they wrap things up. There is hope. Oh my God. This toxic planet, this toxic goddess, she gives a little shred of hope. After a long drought, three new missions for Venus are planned for the next decade. NASA's Da Vinci.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, we'll send a probe to Venus's surface and its Veritas mission, which will map Venus from orbit, as well as the European Space Agency's probe Envision, which will use sound and radio waves to try and analyze the planet's interior from orbit, to hopefully get more data about Venus. I thought this was really neat because, one, there is a part of me that hopes that we can find some way to research the planets that are around us. But it also made me wonder, and I said that I would make this connection back to the goddess Venus and back to Elden Ring, and this is where that's beginning. So we don't know much about Venus's history. We know that it's a horrible, toxic, inhabitable planet. People have still been trying to figure out. Venus has said, no, you shall not pass. I will burn everything that you send to me.
Yeah.
And that got me curious again because when it comes to mythology, a lot of it is seen as kind of witchy mumbo jumbo, and you know, there is some of that. But for me, what makes me most passionate about science is knowing that it came from this sort of mysticism, and a lot of those foundations, like those same, you know, theories were coming by mathematicians. So I went back and did a bit of digging on Venus's origins, and I found some dark stuff. The Sydney Morning Herald describes the dark side of Venus, a goddess that represents more than romance. And it starts pretty ominously. It says, things do not start well. Venus.
Oh, no.
Dun, dun, dun. Venus, yeah. Or Aphrodite, as she was originally called by the Greeks, was a primordial creature said to have been born out of an endless black night before the beginning of the world.
What?
Ancient Greek poets and myth makers told this ghastly story of her origins, but it continues to say, despite Aphrodite's violent and salty start, being born of darkness and in an endless night, the young goddess emerged from the sea on barren dry land and witnessed a miracle, green shoots and flowers springing up beneath her feet. I think this is what motivated some early scientists to think that Earth and Venus were similar. It's really hard to find that. I hope that I can find more research on that. And I'm also hoping that scientists talk to historians and specifically people at City Myth more, because I think that there's a lot of knowledge to be gained there. Oh, the cult of Venus. So she had a cult. That this is not listed anywhere. So this is really, really neat. So I went over again to the dark side of Venus, the goddess of war as well as love. It's super hard to find that. And I think this feeds into the duality of the planet itself. It's got this golden, alluring hue, but it's wicked hot and toxic. Much like Queen Marika, but again, no spoilers for Elden Ring enjoyers. So the Spectator writes here, in the 4th millennium BC, a fearsome trio of goddesses swept into Bronze Age Cyprus from Mesopotamia. Inanna, described in a poem written in circa 2350 BC, of blazing dominion, clad in dread, riding on fire red power, was worshipped in 180 sanctuaries in Babylon alone, while Ishtar was immortalized as she who vanquishes all. Astarte, riding in the bows of a Phoenician boat, encapsulated war, death, and destruction, as well as life and sex. Arriving in Cyprus, a version of these three meddled with the local nature goddess who had succeeded. I don't know if I can say this without laughing. The penis heads. Thus forming a bizarre and alarming bird-headed woman. She came complete with sexy curves, baby at breast, and glamorous earnings to offset her evil-looking beak and eyes.
What?
So that is the true origin, according to the Mesopotamian Cyprus poem of Aphrodite.
That's wild.
Yeah. Penis head, beak, woman with a cult, which coincided with a copper mining boom on Cyprus. Her warlike attributes fell into abeyance, and instead she was worshipped as a source of pleasure and union between men and women, the impulse behind civilization and progress. Her powers were still double-edged. Desire can be destructive as well as harmonious, and she was also, interestingly, non-binary, occasionally with a beard. Does that sound like anyone from Elden Ring?
Yes. Yes, it does.
This tradition flowed into the Greek myth of Aphrodite, whose oversexed father, the sky god Uranos, was castrated by his son Cronos. This gets a little gruesome, so we're going to skip over that just in case somebody's having lunch or something. But I found that so fascinating, and I'm really hoping that we get some sort of information on the surface of Venus. Thank you for listening to my tangent. Please play Elden Ring. Yeah.
Wow. That's so fun. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for being another person that talks about video games and science on this show, because it's usually just me.
Well, you are much more coherent in your descriptions than I am.
It's all good. I have so much. I've been doing this for a long time. It's all good. Now I'm thinking so much more about the Elden Ring DLC, and now I want to read more about Venus and make more connections. This is awesome. I didn't think to look at Venus, but it's like textbook how it connects to Elden Ring.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting.
Big time.
Thank you so much for coming on. This was great. Would you remind our listeners where they can find you?
You can find me across the internet at nimbly.garden. I stream on Twitch a few days a week at twitch.tv/nimbly. And you can also listen to my lore podcast, Ethereal Femme Lorekeeper, at anchor.fm/etherealfem. And the conversation is a little less sparks flying, fact foraging. But thank you both for having me on. Thank you for giving me a space to ramble off about Venus and her beak and evil planets.
And her penis head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week is produced by all of our hosts, including me, Rachel Faltman, along with Jess Bodie, who also serves as our audio engineer and editor extraordinaire. Our theme music is by Billy Cadden. Our logo is by Katie Beloff. If you have questions, suggestions, or weird stories to share, tweet us at weirdest_thing. Thanks for listening, weirdos. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. Having constant congestion and post-nasal drip isn't just annoying. It can literally derail my workday. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. Claritin D's decongestant packs a serious punch, which helps keep my sinuses free and clear no matter what allergens I
I have to face. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.